We're back. Hi, Daff.
Hello, mother.
Why do we always say that? Why do I always say hi, Daff? Because you're fucking right there, and I've been with you for the last 25 years, so I don't really
know why you need to say hi, Daff, or why my voice just cracked like a little boy. No shame to little boys. Just, you know.
You're not one?
I'm not one, so my voice shouldn't be cracking.
My voice shouldn't be cracking.
My voice shouldn't be cracking. No McCracken over here for my voice.
But it did.
But it did.
Yeah.
But it do.
But it do.
All right. What you got for me on your disturbing?
Oh, we're rolling right in? That's probably a great idea.
Well, I feel like that's our only thing we can do is roll right in. I don't really want to talk about my week of school and that I'm accomplishing all A's. So,
yay, good job.
Kind of sick of school and how good of a student I am and that I'm getting all A's.
Moving on.
Moving on.
All right. My disturbing...
All right.
All right.
We're just really getting in the spirit of today's episode.
Clear. Oh, are we? Is it Canadian?
No.
Oh.
It's Australian, but...
Oh.
Okay. Sorry. Continue.
Okay. Now my phone went away. My disturbing fact is about cults. Did you know that? Did you know?
What?
My disturbing fact is about cults. Did you know?
Do tell.
That as of July of 2023, it's estimated that there are an average 10,000 cults in the United States. In the USA alone. 10,000.
I believe it.
You do? How come you're never fucking shocked by anything I say?
Well, because the other night when I was driving, I went on a date and we were driving.
And you went into a cult?
I feel like I did join a cult. Anyway. Yeah. No comment. No, we were driving past this place and he said, well, that place looks like a cult every time I drive past it. And I was like, yeah, it kind of does look like a cult.
It kind of does. Yeah.
Well, no, but if you think about it, like there are cults that aren't like extremist things, right?
I guess.
Like, there are cults of people like you and I who love Animal Crossing.
A cult of personality, like that Living Color song?
What?
Never mind.
Huh?
I would play it, but then we'd have to pay for the rights.
I feel like everything is a cult. So it's a lot of numbers, but that doesn't shock me that there's that many out there. But I would like to know how many of them are bad.
Oh, I don't know. But it just says that there's an estimated 10,000 cults in the United States of America. And the first estimate of people as of 1982, so this is an old one, that there are 331,000 people in cults to 4,300,000 in the United States. So that's...
Wait, okay, so that's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're all, like...
I know, like you said, they're not all bad.
Like, eating children and harvesting black cats on full moons.
No, I'm not talking... just
not a coven.
I'm like, that doesn't necessarily make a cult. A cult is just people who, like, are brainwashed into following something, and then they all, like, do it together.
You know, there's a new series about this cult on HBO that I really want to check out. Or I guess it's called Max, that I really want to check out.
Okay. I thought you meant the cult was called Max, but then I realized you were talking about HBO.
No, it's about...
Max.
It's about this woman. They called her like the mother. Have you heard of this at all?
Yeah, it's a cult.
And she was supposed to be taken in a spaceship that was driven by like Leonardo DiCaprio or something.
What?
So you have... I really want to watch the documentary because it seems really interesting. Like, how do I get abducted in a spaceship by Leonardo DiCaprio?
Yeah, no kidding. That sounds like a dream cult.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Sounds like a dream cult. True.
A dream... Wowzers.
That's pretty funny.
It is pretty funny. So the number of cult members that there are in the United States is like 0.1% to 1.3% of the United States population. So it doesn't seem like a lot, but it does. It seems like that's a lot of people, like 1%.
That does seem like a lot of people, 1%.
Yeah. And then the second estimate is from a later date. And that doesn't have the date, but this one says that there's 1.6 million to 6.6 million people internationally.
This reminds me of when I almost was brought into a cult.
Oh my God, yeah. I forgot about that.
Okay, so now I think we need to have a quick story time.
Okay.
So
I forgot. Daphne was almost in a cult.
I don't know who knows this about me or not. I went to CU Boulder. And on campus one day, I was CU Boulder, SCO Buffs, I know. Buffs for life.
But like Shups for life.
Like Shups for life, but Buffs for life. A lady walks up to me one day and she's like, hey, you got a minute to talk? I was like, yeah, sure, whatevs. It's like, I'll be nice. I didn't see all these other people like rolling their eyes and flipping you off, you know? I'll be kind. And she's like, well, can you talk about Jesus? I was like, I can. Yeah, what do you want to know? So basically, no, we're doing Bible study and it's fine. I didn't grow up religiously, so I've had my own, what is the right words I'm looking for? My own journey in figuring out like what fits in my life and what doesn't, what works for me. And so
you're welcome for giving you religious freedom.
Yes, exactly. Instead of religious persecution, like I almost faced. Anyway, no. So she and I are chit-chatting one day, right? And then she's like, hey, I'd really love to get you to come to church with me. And so I went to go to church with her and I like pulled into the parking lot and I was like, I can't go in. I was like, something is so not sitting right with me.
Plus, where was it?
At a fucking hotel, in a conference room at a hotel in Boulder. It was so weird. Yeah, not even at a church. And then I looked him up on Google, looked up the church, and there were all these things. And then there was a picture of the chick who I did the Bible study with, her face on a poster that was like, if you see these people on campus, beware.
Run.
Yeah, they're like, the pastor will let you live in his house until he finds you a husband and like all these things. And it's like, oh, don't need that.
Are you sure? Maybe you should have gone with that.
Maybe I should have. I probably could have found a husband by now.
But it's the husband cult.
Yeah, it's the husbandry cult.
But didn't he have like a bunch of wives or something?
Yeah, they also said that he had like a bunch of wives and
you could have been one of his wives.
Yeah, because I love
non-monogamy.
Dreams.
Ew. Well, no, then you could have a wife that does laundry and that wouldn't be you. And you could have a wife that cleans and that wouldn't be you. You could have a wife that cooks. That could be you.
That could be me. I do like cooking, but yeah. No, I'm okay on that.
Okay. I'm just throwing it out there. Not that I recommend cultism for you or anyone
else. I don't recommend cultism for myself either. But yeah, no. And then I ghosted her. And then one day I was working and where I used to work, I was on the patio section. I was a server. And I hear, Daphne, Daphne. I was like, oh God. I was like, I should have never shared where I worked.
She would have recognized you.
Maybe. Maybe she would have. Maybe she wouldn't have. I don't know. But I just, yeah, remembering. And then, yeah, there were a bunch of, like, CU, like, the private, like, newspapers that people, like, were a part of, like, the clubs and stuff. People wrote, like, a bunch of different articles on them. It's pretty interesting.
It is.
You could look it up. CU Boulder Church Cult.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
I did look it up after you told me because I was like, no fucking way. Yeah, so Daphne was almost in a cult.
I was almost a part of a cult, guys.
Yeah, I forgot about that. So, yeah, all right. That was it. Except for that there is also another part to it. That's it, except not. There's a cult awareness network. So people can, like, if they suspect cults or whatever, can contact this cult awareness network so that it provides information about cults or just lets people know if you think you might be getting into a cult, you can call this place or reach out to this place online or whatever and be like, hey, I'm with this, and this. Is it a cult?
So I should have done that.
Well, you figured it out on your own before you got sucked in.
It was something that she said. I don't remember what she said, but something that just like really, really just like drove it home for me. That she said, and then that was when I was on my way to go to the church and parked in the parking lot of this hotel and was like, this is not a church, A, and B, why am I in a hotel parking lot, and C, something is not right here. So, yeah, that's my funny cult story.
I like it.
I don't like
it because we laugh about it, but it was
we do laugh crazy. About it, but it was pretty weird.
Yeah. The cult awareness network. So originally there was a cult awareness network and then now there's a new cult awareness network. But the original cult awareness network actually came into play because of Scientology.
Okay, I believe that.
Yeah, me too. So the old cult awareness network, which publicly opposed Scientology as well as other groups it considered to be cults, was driven into bankruptcy in 1996. And so then they opened a new organization.
Little did they know they're also a cult.
Right. I guess so, basically. I don't know. But yeah, it's crazy. Because I was reading the other day that there were these people, they were looking for like 6 family members that they thought had been like swept up into a cult. And they left the house wherever they were at. I didn't take notes on it, but I was just like, wow, that's so weird to think about people actually still getting in cults and stuff. But the neighbors in the house where the people lived said that they would like sit in the backyard and like chant. And sometimes they would be naked and sometimes they'd be topless and they would just sit out there and like kind of in that meditative state. And they would just chant and chant and chant. And then when it came around that their families were looking for them, then they left the house.
That is so weird.
Yeah. And I read that like maybe 2-3 weeks ago. And I'm just like, wow, that's crazy in this day and age, which it's not really crazy, but it is.
I think it's crazy how well known it is.
Maybe. Or it's crazy. With
mass media.
It's crazy that people still can fall into that.
Well,
I guess if you want to believe in something.
I'm having a semi-identity crisis again recently with my good studentry. That maybe I should join this cult.
On second thought,
maybe I should reach out and be like, hi, I know I ghosted you, but let's have a conversation, please.
I'm really interested in being in your cult.
Oh my God, I haven't even opened any of the messages from her. I think there's probably about, I want to say 10-15 messages from her.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's a stalker cult also.
She's like, hey, Bible study. Hey, really love to see you at church today. OMG, so good running into you. You didn't fucking run into me. You found me. But I hear Daphne. I'm like, oh, fuck.
Ah, fuck. All right, well, that's it. That's all I got.
Okay. Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome. Thank you for sharing your story.
I completely forgot about that. I feel weird now.
I need to go shower.
Basically, I'm like, I feel kind of dirty now. Okay.
You want to hear what I have today?
Yeah, I want to hear what you got. Today is going to be a two-parter. So obviously, we're not getting two parts today, but today's part one of a two-parter.
We get one part of two.
Yeah, one part of two. Half of a whole. So Martin John Bryant, he was born May 7th, 1967. Why are you laughing at me?
Because the way you're moving your hand, you're all like, oh my God, guess what? This guy,
he was born. And that's how it went. In Hobart, I think so you say it.
In Tasmania, in Australia.
I love that.
Tasmania?
Yeah, I dislike it.
I like the name too.
Yeah.
Like, I really want to go there.
I want just a Tasmanian devil.
Me too. They're cute.
Yeah.
They are. Have you seen them?
I have seen them. They are cute.
They're
like
them.
Mini Wolverines, kind of.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. They're adorable.
Yeah.
Precious.
And so I wrote this down. I said, I even know the hospital he was born at.
Queen Alexandra Hospital. And he was 6 pounds even.
Alrighty.
His mom was in labor for 2...
Are you fucking kidding me right now?
That I can't speak?
Are you really going to tell how long his mom was in labor?
I found it out.
So this is why it's going to be two parts, because we're starting at birth.
So his mom was in labor for 2 hours. And his dad just waited by his mom's side during the delivery. I read that his mom was an amazing pregnant woman. He didn't have any of the bad pregnancy symptoms.
That's nice.
Martin. And that she worked at the chocolate factory right up until Martin was like basically born. Okay, sorry, I'll be done now. I just thought it was so funny I could get that information, so I went with it.
Alrighty then. I like that she worked in a chocolate factory.
I do too. Sorry if you couldn't understand any of that. I'll give you the skinny real quick. His mom was in labor for 2 hours. His dad was there. Great dad. Mom was a good pregnant woman. She basically worked at the chocolate factory right up until he was born. And then a local newspaper wrote to them, to Carlene and Maurice, a bouncing boy, thanks to doctors and staff.
Aww.
To his parents. His mom, Carlene, and his dad, Maurice. A little shout out to them.
I like it.
Yeah, kind of sweet, huh?
Very sweet. And so, I like the name Carlene.
I do too.
Is it Carlene or Charlene?
Carlene.
Because I was like, that'd be cool if it was Charlene. And then it was Charlene and the Chocolate Factory.
Jesus Christ. I would have peed my pants.
Oh my God.
This is going to be a lot of fun to edit.
Sorry.
Okay.
I'm dying.
I hear that.
Sorry.
It's your fault. So I know he was the oldest child. I don't know how many other kids there were in the family, but I do know he has a younger sister named Lindy.
I like how you know where he was born and how much he weighed, but you don't know how many actual children there were.
Not sure.
Okay. Some of the details you can find out are just ridiculous, and the ones you need to find out, you can't.
I just thought it was pretty great that I found that he was 6 pounds.
I love it. So. I hope he grew.
I think he did just a little bit. So for Carlene, it said that the first year as a mother was peaceful for her. But then she remembers her little boy was like really happy and content and unfazed. But then I guess in hindsight, it was actually he was like a baby who didn't want to be like cuddled and didn't want any signs of physical affection.
Aw, that's really sad.
Yeah. So it said that she was a super stoic woman and that she took it in stride when Martin was rejecting breastfeeding as a sign of his unquenchable appetite.
Okay.
Which is just kind of weird.
Right.
So his mom said that when he was 16 months old, he started running away from her. So he had a hard time. So she had a hard time parenting him, right?
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
16 months running away.
Yeah. Like
crazy.
Like she just could not keep him together. She also said that she would find his toys broken and that he was, quote, an annoying and, quote, different kind of child.
Wow.
He would disappear regularly from their house. His parents would find him in the strangest places. Once on top of a chook pen next door. I don't know what that is.
What's a chook? You don't know what a chook pen is?
I don't know what a chook pen is.
Okay.
Or even further away, he was one time he was like on a swing with that was across the other side of the railroad tracks. That ran north from Hober along the Derwent's western foreshore. Sorry, this does not mean anything to any one of us, but it's just landmarks and how far away they were.
So was it far from their house?
Yeah.
The swing set?
Yeah, it was far.
Or the swing or whatever?
Yeah, it was like across town.
Okay.
Across town, sorry.
Because I didn't know if they like lived by the railroad tracks and he was just on the other side of the railroad tracks.
No, it was pretty far, I guess.
Okay.
So his mother once said, and this is a quote from her, I started to leave him on the house veranda with a harness and a lead to secure him with plenty of toys around him. Some person made a complaint about us tying him up like a dog. But of course, as his mother, I knew he was happy and safe.
Alrighty then.
So yeah, she has her kid on a harness and
way
a leash.
Way to handle it.
Yeah. And for his mom, Carlene, she said that his energy was like unmanageable. But to his father, Maurice, he seemed just fine.
Okay. So, isn't that always mostly the way?
Yeah. So obviously, like, his parents had very different parenting styles for him. For Carlene, when she was coping with Martin, it was like a daily reality. Said that she had to use a lot of problem solving strategies, logistics, and survival mechanisms in having her son.
That sounds hardcore.
Yeah. She said that there would be little time for physical affection or for day-to-day nurture, like, just because who he was.
Because he wouldn't have it.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have it. He didn't want to be loved.
Maurice's fathering was very different. Hands-on, intense. He wanted to like normalize Martin, right?
You will love us.
You will love us. We're going to smother you.
You will let us hold you.
Basically. So his childhood home was in Lena Valley, but the family spent a lot of time at their beach house in Carnarvon.
Bay.
Carnarvon. Bay. Which I just noted here. That sounds nice that they had a beach house.
Right. I was just thinking that. I was like, how do you get a beach house if you work at a chocolate factory? Chocolate.
I don't know what his dad did.
Maybe something more lucrative.
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure exactly what his dad did, but I have like some mentions of it later. So his mom would say her disappointment and frustrations with her son happened because like he was an odd kid, right? And he had a bad temper. He had no focus. And like one time, I guess he swallowed a nail.
Oh, shit.
He wouldn't cuddle. He had a really slow speech development. Other problems were appearing too. While he ran and climbed and wandered the neighborhood, his fine motor skills were impaired. He didn't seem to be maturing at all for a boy his age. And when he was 3 years old, it was like very obvious to them that something was definitely wrong with him.
Wow.
Yeah.
It sounds like something was definitely wrong from the beginning.
Yeah. Sounds like it, right?
Yeah. But I guess, like, I don't know, you have to go through it to realize that this is all really fucked up. Or, like, not fucked up. What's the word I'm looking for? So you just think maybe you're, it's like, hard. She said that her kid, she just didn't think she was giving enough milk. So he didn't want to breastfeed because he wasn't getting enough and all of that. But then, like, there's just layers upon layers upon layers of things that are not normal child behavior. Right. And if he was the oldest, was he the oldest?
Yeah, he's the oldest.
So they have,
I think that there's only the younger sister, but that's all I could find anyway.
So they don't have anything to compare it to.
Right.
Other than maybe with their friends or family or whatever. Like, oh my God, so my kid does this and this.
And I don't know what the age difference is between him and his sister either. Okay. I mean, there's a picture of them as kids. Mm-hmm. And it looks like he's maybe like 3 or 4 when she's born. Like, he's definitely a toddler when she's born.
Gotcha.
So his enrollment in his early education only highlighted his developmental skills and his impairment, which began like the cycle of rejection and isolation and solitude for him.
That's sad.
Yeah. And that would, you know, go on throughout the course of his life.
Because kids are mean.
Yeah. People recalled an incident where Martin pulled a snorkel from another boy who was diving.
Oh, shit.
And another time where he cut down trees on his neighbor's property. Like, kind of random, but okay. Just odd behaviors, right? I guess.
I'm going to cut down your trees.
So what we're noting here is the odd behavior. His teachers described him as being totally detached from reality and just absolutely no emotions whatsoever.
Wow. So he's a sociopath.
Right? No.
Oh.
No, not necessarily.
Because isn't a sociopath devoid of human emotion, basically, and feeling?
I don't know.
Okay.
We'll dive into it later, because I have a lot on him.
Okay.
Obviously.
Obviously, if it's a two-parter.
Obviously, if it's about him.
And that.
So his teachers described him, like I said, as just being a loner. His school was the Newtown Primary in Forster Street. So he was a loner to them, but it wasn't by his own choice. Like, he would often push other kids away from wanting to be his friend and wanting to interact with him.
Okay.
They said that his efforts to make friends were misinterpreted as aggravating, such as his silly games of creeping up and leaping on other kids as they walked home after school.
That's fucking weird.
Yeah. So, you know, the message to him was that, you know, he doesn't belong.
And so I'm going to attack you?
I don't think that that's necessarily true. Not that I'm going to attack you. I think he just didn't know how to play.
Okay.
I think that's what's happening here is he didn't know how to do these things.
So he's trying to play by
violence?
Yeah.
Trying to play with violence. It said that if he was caught, like, while they were, like, chasing him through the streets, Martin would cry and squeal and as if he was being hurt. And students who, like, were in his class would say this, that we'd always let him go because we felt sorry for him. And then in school, he was obviously severely bullied.
Yeah.
But he was also violent and disruptive.
Yeah.
And in 1977, when he was 10, he was suspended from Newtown Primary School. I don't know why he was suspended. I don't have any explanation on that. But he returned to school the following year.
He was suspended for a whole year?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a long suspension.
Well, I don't know if he was suspended the entire year, but it said that he returned to school the following year with better behavior. However, he was picking then on younger kids.
Fucking bullies.
Yep. So then he was transferred to a special education unit at the Newtown High School in 1980, where he began to, like, dramatically start deteriorating, not only academically, but behaviorally throughout, like, his time in school.
So it wasn't helpful.
Wasn't helpful. Also, I'm not really sure why this was included. What happened here? Not why it was included, but what happened. In 1979, he was hospitalized at the Royal Hobart Hospital for a firework accident.
Oh.
So I'm not really sure what's happening here.
Well, if you're hospitalized for it, you got severely burned or blew a finger off or something.
Yeah. And then I know he got interviewed by like a news station
while he was in the hospital.
Yeah.
For like fireworks safety.
Probably.
What not to do.
Yeah, exactly. So in high school, he was just a complete like recluse, you know, as we already might have guessed.
Right.
So for his 14th birthday, his dad decided to gift him an air rifle.
Well, that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, for sure. Great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's give him a gun.
Right. He's already violent. Let's pile on that.
Yeah.
Let's roll with it.
Like, oh my gosh. And if you can actually believe this, this was around the time that was noted by people when his behavior began to change.
Weird.
I'm like, really? This is when you guys noticed the change in behavior, though? Not that he was a little odd all along.
Right.
So he would often hide in the creek bed behind his home and fire into traffic or out into the bay at night.
What a fucker.
Yeah. Trigger warning. Animal. Oh. One time he shot a parrot out of a tree.
A parrot? That's so sad.
A parrot, like a bird? Yeah.
Yeah, no, I know what a parrot is. Because at first I thought you were going to say like the neighbor's parrot. But I guess in Australia, parrots are free range.
Wild.
Free range parrots.
And then he went and found it. And then he went and shot it more times.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He was also He was also blamed for untying boats from the moorings. And if you're unfamiliar with what a mooring is, I looked it up. It's a dock or a pier.
Mm-hmm.
I just assumed. I feel like a lot of people can put two and two together like I could and, you know, assume that's what it was. But I looked it up. So you're welcome.
Clarification.
And around this time, his best friend Greg broke up with him because Martin stuck the point of a spear gun into the top of his head.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow. I would not want to be his friend either.
No, he sounds like a really good friend.
Oh, my gosh.
Sounds like how could you want to leave that friendship?
A spear gun in your head?
Yeah, just like stuck the top of it in there, like taunting him.
Yeah.
Yeah. PTSD for sure. So on May 6th, 1983, just one day before his 16th birthday, he dropped out of high school. And he didn't come to this decision on his own, though. His parents brought him to a clinical psychiatrist, Dr. Eric Cunningham Dax. And Dr. Dax, he was well known as like a community health doctor, like a mental health advocate in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And he even had like his own research unit. And this is a quote from Carlene. It didn't take him long to see that Martin had a problem. Martin was not able to concentrate on what Dr. Dax was saying and interrupted him to talk about the age of the house and the fireplace in the room. After a few more consultations, Dr. Dax said Martin would be unemployable as he would upset and annoy people to the extent he would always be in trouble. He would have to be put on a disability pension.
At 16, he's making that life decision.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it sounds like he's whack and has a lot of issues and stuff, but for a doctor to be like at 16, okay, you're fucked.
Right. Yeah, you're screwed. But this is Dr. Dax's notes. He died in 2008. His surviving notes on this says, and this is a quote, cannot read or write. Does a bit of gardening and watches TV. Only his parents' efforts that prevent further deterioration. Could be schizophrenic and parents face a bleak future with him.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah.
And he's 16 and he can't 16. Read or write.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yes, he's got a lot of issues.
Yeah.
So he receives this disability pension, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the next 3 years of his life are completely uneventful. But Maurice came to like... His dad was just like basically took full control of his care
mm-hmm.
at this point. I don't know why Carlene didn't.
Well, because you said in the beginning, I'm just throwing it out there that the dad had a very different
approach,
parenting style.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying I don't know why Carlene didn't, you know, also do it, even though they had different parenting styles.
Well, maybe she was just done with it.
I'm not sure. But his dad took on full time care of him.
Gotcha.
So in 1987, Martin met 54-year-old heiress Helen Marie Elizabeth Harvey. I'm having a very hard time Englishing today, and this is Australian, so it's even like proper English and hard. her grandfather was David Hasty Harvey, and he had been the general manager to George Adams, who was the creator of the Tattersall's gambling empire.
Wow.
Yeah.
So a gambling empire.
Yeah. So good money.
Money, money, money.
So it said that Helen did have a job at the time, or a job at one point at the Tasmanian Railways. But at 28, her dad had passed away unexpectedly. And so she quit to spend the rest of her life with her mom, Hilza.
Mm-hmm.
She moved into her family home, which was called Wybruna, which was at number 30 Clare Street in Newtown. By the mid-80s, she and her mom were like just complete recluses. The shopkeepers in the small like town on the Newtown Road regarded Helen as an eccentric but essentially harmless character. They said she was heavyset, she was missing a couple teeth, with a whiff of body odor combined with aging clothes, desperate for a wash and some air. She loved to chat with everyone. She even talked about her old Hollywood friends, Errol Flynn and Rock Hudson, who she insisted she was like really good friends with.
Okay. I have no comment about any of these things because it won't be nice.
Right. Yeah. So according. Right. Yeah. As we just talked about, we need to stop doing that. So according to Carlene, Martin found Helen in 1987 when he was almost 20, when he was wandering the streets alone while his dad was at work. At this point, he had like an established routine of like mowing lawns and like taking care of people's gardens, but he was always looking for new customers.
Mm-hmm.
He saw the overgrown garden through the iron fence and decided to knock at the door. And people said the garden was like absolutely unruly, which is like kind of like mine last summer. I understand.
It sounds like it's worse if people are knocking on the door, though. Hey, can I help you with this?
Right. Helen, she answered the door and she agreed that Martin could clean up her yard, and they became instant friends upon the first meeting. People said that it was an intuition they had about one another and that they both struggled with like being misunderstood by the world and having a misunderstanding of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, they just like instantly clicked and became friends at that
point. Kindred spirits.
Yeah, basically.
Gotcha.
So eventually Martin was doing regular work for Helen, like tending to the garden, feeding the 40 cats in the garage, or care of the 14 dogs that were inside of the house.
Wow. I'm down with the 14 dogs, but 40 cats. But can the dogs go outside, hopefully?
So it said that the dogs had the run of the downstairs portion of the house, and Helen and Hilza lived upstairs in the house.
So it sounds like maybe that wasn't a good deal.
Maybe not.
Not a good situation.
Martin, you know, had finally found someone who, like, she saw his ugliness.
And can I just say, to explain myself, that I don't not like cats. I do like cats. We have 3 cats.
Oh, God.
We do not have 30 or 40 cats.
Oh, my God. If we had 37 more cats, I think I might take one for the team and off myself. God, I could not do it.
No.
I can barely do my own kitten.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, I don't want people to think that, oh, she only likes dogs and she doesn't like cats. No judging.
No,
I like cats. I just don't like 40 of them. I have
a tiny little baby kitten who's not so tiny and little and a baby anymore. She's going to be 6 months old this month.
Yeah.
And she's crazy. That's what I'm saying. I can barely handle her. She's so crazy sometimes. She'll like climb up my leg recently. I don't know what that's about. This is a new thing she's doing that she's decided to climb up my leg. I'm like, woman, you need to leave me alone.
Imagine having 40 of those.
Oh, fuck that. See, luckily the other two we have don't really want much to do with me. So I'm cool on that front, which is why I got Sunday, because I love cats and she loves me.
Yeah.
And we love each other and we're a happy family. But anyway.
Ooh, Chinese food.
Happy family. Did I already say that Helen and Hilza lived upstairs and the dogs had downstairs?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So Martin had found someone who didn't see, like, the weirdness in him and turn him down and turn him away.
Mm-hmm.
And what Helen saw was, you know, a good-looking young man with an easy grin who revealed his disabilities, his social and intellectual weirdness and oddities the minute he opened his mouth.
Weirdness and oddities. Okay.
So much later, this is like much down the road. This will definitely come more into play in part 2. But this is a quote from a forensic psychiatrist named Dr. Paul Mullen. When he asked Martin about the relationship he had with Helen Harvey, he said that he describes Miss Harvey as having been his only real friend. He said from the outset that they got on well together. It was not a sexual relationship. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Just keep that in mind.
Okay. Gotcha. Keep that noted.
Keep that noted. Stick that somewhere and remember it.
Yeah.
So obviously Helen and Martin went from boss and employee to friend and then constant companions. So Helen's mother, Hilza, who was 77 at this point, like when they had like started to get to know each other,
mm-hmm.
was constantly left alone. She was moved from upstairs to the kitchen at some point where she had to sleep there upright in a chair where she was suffering from an untreated broken hip.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she's not really caring for her mother.
No, she's not really. But she's also, like, not really caring for herself either.
Well, yeah, it sounds like it.
So in June of 1990, someone made a report to the health authorities, and they arrived to find both Hilza and Helen both in need of urgent medical attention.
Well, it's good that somebody called.
Yeah, no shit. I don't know who called, but yeah.
Living in the kitchen in a chair with a broken hip?
Yeah.
That sounds horrible.
So Hilza had infected leg ulcers.
Ew.
And the kitchen was nasty with the dogs having the run of the bottom floor. Like I said, there were dishes piled up so high and they said that there was like mold like growing like outwardly on things.
Ew.
Yeah.
Just I'm getting nauseous.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
So 79-year-old Hilza was obviously very neglected. She was 77 when, like, the two started hanging out, right? She's 79 at this point.
Right. So 2 years of hanging out.
Yes. So she was obviously neglected, sitting unattended, sitting, like, just by herself with her broken hip, right? Which she didn't know was broken, withering away in the kitchen. So as horrified as they were, the ambulance, the medical people, the medical personnel that went there, they decided not to cast any judgment onto the situation.
Well, that's good.
Is it, though?
Well, there's no judging. There's helping, but you don't have to judge.
Yeah.
Because they could be mentally ill.
Judgment versus help, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, like, sometimes there's helpful judgment of, like, taking care of things.
Yeah.
Forcing people to get it together. So after several weeks of being in the hospital, she was moved to a nursing home where she died at the end of July. Hilza.
Yeah, I got you.
So then the RSPCA took away most of the animals while Helen was in the hospital.
Aw.
I feel fine about that.
I mean, they probably hopefully got homes.
I feel like it was better than being in that situation that they were in, though.
Hopefully, as long as they got homes.
Yeah. So a cleanup order was also placed on the house. And Maurice, remember Martin's dad?
Mm-hmm.
Took it upon himself to take a long service leave and to help coordinate on the job with his son. So it took them 3 months.
Holy fuck.
To clean the house.
Jesus.
To scrape all the filth from the floors, the walls, every surface of every orifice of this house.
Why not at that point just fucking knock it down and start
burn
over?
Burn it.
Yeah. Burn it.
So it said that a dozen dumpsters were filled with trash.
Oh my God. Sorry. Try not to throw up in my mouth. 3 fucking months to clean the house and a dozen dumpsters.
Yeah. 4 dumpsters a month. That's 1 a week that they're filling.
That's disgusting.
God, that's there's so
statistics
gross.
For you.
And Helen's entire wardrobe had to be thrown away.
Okay.
So at this point, Helen's life is obviously, like, gone because of, like, her belongings and such. And her mom has passed away, which was good in the fact that she could start her life, like, anew and, you know, get it back together.
A fresh, clean start.
Yeah. But with her new live-in companion, Martin.
Hmm.
So it's said that, like, you know, obviously they're a very odd, strange pairing.
Mm-hmm.
That they spent days wandering around shops in the town looking for new ways to spend money and add to their growing collections of whatever the fuck they have at home.
What money? Where do they get the money?
Remember, she's an heiress?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right. She's an heiress to a gambling fortune.
Uh-huh.
And he's a lawn guy.
Yeah, he's a lawn guy. He's a mooch on her money, yes, basically. So, said that, like, they were always looking to add to their collections at home, which I don't really know what their collections were that they had at home.
Dogs and cats.
Yeah, but those were taken away.
Right. But they didn't start anew.
No, they didn't. Not yet. We'll get there. But they basically told them that they couldn't have them at the house.
Okay.
So their ventures were most often in the afternoon after a leisurely, like, lunch in a local restaurant. They went to car dealerships in particular and registration records would show the Tats lady to the shopkeepers when mm-hmm. she went to go buy new cars. Mm-hmm. So they're referring to Helen because she had collected and hoarded cars all of her life. She accumulated around 50 in her life.
That's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah.
Unless they're like all in your front yard.
Yeah.
On blocks and shit.
So it said that some of them she only kept for like a few months, some of them a matter of weeks, and some of them, you know, a few days.
She's like, just kidding. I don't want it.
Yeah. She's like selling this bitch. But yeah, it said that some of them she like sometimes she got some of them during a splurge in the 70s. But the rest of them, like, she had accumulated with her time with Martin.
Fucking weird.
It is weird. So, despite his friendship with Helen, he was having some, like, major behavioral issues. And his mood swings were becoming, like, way more erratic. So, he began playing pranks again. Which would, like, just turn into, like, outright threats.
And pranks on who?
People.
Oh, just random people?
Yeah, just random people.
So pranks, a.k.a. threats.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, obviously, I feel like I don't have to say this, but he's got, like, a really quick temper. And so that was also, like, presenting itself more.
Gotcha.
And
neither... I feel like you had to say it. I didn't know.
Oh, well, I thought I said it earlier that he had a temper.
Yeah, but you didn't say it was quick.
Okay, yeah, it's quick. It's quick to flare. He gets fired up real fucking fast. So, any hoodles, his parents nor Helen called for him to get reassessed for his mental health, but the state did at this point.
Wow. So it's gone that far awry that, like, the state knows how bad he is.
The state knows how bad he is, yes.
Alrighty then.
So, not the state, but, like, their social security system. I don't know in what provinces.
Social Service Administration, not yeah. Social Security, but like.
No, it's their social security system.
Okay, gotcha. Because he's on disability.
He's on disability. Gotcha. For it. Yep. He's on a pension.
Yeah.
So the assessment would allow him to remain on the disability pension. And this note was attached to his file. Father protects him from any occasion which might upset him as he continually threatens violence. Martin tells me he would like to go around shooting people. It would be unsafe to allow Martin out of his parents' control.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Give him, how about instead of giving him an air gun, give him a real one?
Shit. So learning about this note, this change on his file, mm-hmm. Maurice was like, "Aw, fuck." You know, and in November of 1991, he filed his will with the public trustee's office. The document, which was succinct and without emotional flourish, recognized that his son would find it difficult to manage his life in the event of his father's passing. So he willed the family home to Carlene, or in the event of her death, it was supposed to be divided between the two children, between Martin and Lindy. Mm-hmm. And Martin would require extra resources, so he left him with the proceeds of a superannuation fund, which was held with the Commonwealth Life Policy, and I'm not going to read you the number, even though I wrote it down, which was worth more than $250,000, like Australian dollars.
But it's an annuity, so it'll gain interest.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
So basically, you know, his dad's just trying to, like, I guess, look out for him, but make sure that he's not the one who can actually access his money.
Right.
When the time comes.
Gotcha.
That, you know, there's a trust in place.
Because he'll go out and buy a bunch of fucking cars, apparently.
Apparently. So, Maurice must have told Helen about this will, because then 3 weeks later, she named Martin as her trustee.
Oh, my God.
And she wrote, "My friend Martin Bryant, for his absolute use and benefit." So, that phrase, it was repeated 4 times in the paragraphs where she left her possessions to Martin, including all of her livestock, her animals, her birds, her Clare Street mansion, a farm in... Copping, I think is how you say it, and her Tattersall's income.
What the fuck?
Yeah, so she left everything to him.
I got that.
So
I'm sorry, I'm just
this,
like...
Back to this farm. At some point, Helen and Martin decided to move to a 72-acre run-down farm in Copping, which was halfway between Hobart and Port Arthur.
I like the 71-72-acre part, but run-down, no.
Yeah, right. So they named the property Torresville.
Oh, I like it.
But this was the part that was, you know, left, that she had left to him. One of the everything.
Right.
One of the everything.
One of the everything. In the farm. I heard you say the farm because yeah. It made me go, huh, they have a farm.
Yep. Well, they had just moved into this farm.
And you said all of her animals and her birds. I thought that she wasn't allowed to have them.
So they moved here with the intention so they could have animals again.
Okay.
But I kind of think that this is a great name for a farm because the Taurus zodiac is a bull.
Mm-hmm.
And that just like makes sense to me. And yeah. I wrote that in my notes.
I got it.
I was like, I like that a lot.
I like it. I like it a lot.
So neighbors.
Could you imagine how many dogs we could have if we had 72 acres?
Could you imagine how much I would cry? We have too many right now.
I love my dogs.
Okay. Anyway, I love them too. The neighbors would watch Martin with concern and they would avoid him at all costs.
Yeah.
So some remembered a wild-eyed boy who appeared to take a delight in firing his air rifle at tourists.
Fucker.
As they stopped to buy apples at a stall on the highway.
Jesus.
Oh, God. Can I tell you? I said this one's crazy.
Could you imagine you're fucking pulled over to, like, a roadside fruit stand, and all of a sudden you're getting, like, pinged with... You're like, what the fuck is that? What's happening? And then you're like, see this little fucker up in the tree or whatever.
Yeah.
Fucking shooting at you. It sounds like a bad movie.
It does sound like a bad movie. Poor guy. I feel bad for him, though. But, yeah, just clearly needed more help than he was receiving.
Clearly.
But for some neighbors, his penchant for roaming the properties at the dead of night would make them really fearful of him.
Yeah.
Even though they wouldn't see him, but the dogs would bark and then they would hear gunfire.
Fuck.
So
I would be uncomfortable with that as well.
I just don't understand, though, how he's going out there roaming, like, 72 acres. It's a lot of land for him to be roaming and, like, getting onto neighbor's properties.
Maybe he has an ATV.
Yeah, maybe he's got a bike.
Some roller skates.
So after they moved to the farm, he, like, his style, like, totally changed. He used to wear his white overalls and his cardigan all the time.
What the fuck?
It was, like, red cardigan, I guess I should say.
White overalls and a red cardigan. That's yeah. A choice to look.
And then he, like, decided he was going to go, like, all country and play the part.
And did he, like, chew on straw and stuff?
I don't know about that far, but he definitely looked like he belonged to live on a farm. Belonged to live. Huh? Words. So even though the two moved, they continued to, like, go to lunch and go shopping all the time and, like, go to the town. And they would often be, like, known as those people who would leave their car packed full of animals. And people were to report that it was weird seeing cars packed with miniature ponies.
What the fuck? Oh, my God. My jaw dropped because I'm imagining there's, like, a fucking golden doodle in the back or something.
Cat.
Ponies, dogs, and cats in a car all together.
Yeah. They're also said that they would leave, like, cash in, like, really strange and weird places in the house, but that it wasn't, like, a strategy of them being whatever. It was just they were careless and didn't care where they left their money.
Must be nice.
Right? So remember how I said the two, well, Helen had the bunch of cars.
Mm-hmm. Ponies in them.
With ponies in them and dogs and cats. And maybe birds and maybe a goat from time or two.
Fuck.
I don't know what kind of animals were all on the farm.
A Tasmanian devil.
But we do know that there were miniature ponies on the farm because people saw them in the back of the car.
It's so fucking weird.
It is. It's so odd. Well, Martin, he couldn't drive because he was too scared. And so he, like, never even attempted to get a license because I guess he had this, like, really crippling fear of failure. So, like, just drove him to never drive. But he was the sketchiest passenger in the car. He would often reach across Helen's body and grab the steering wheel.
What the fuck?
So
I can't drive. Let me have the wheel from over here.
So I guess these impulses, like, weren't, like, a death wish of his, but, like, a very childlike thing. Like, he couldn't control the impulses he was having.
Okay. So he has, like, Tourette's of the hand?
Yeah. He didn't understand that this could be dangerous.
Okay.
But because of this, Helen, she, like, never even attempted to go over 60 kilometers per hour or 37 miles per hour for us, and only drove on the country roads. Like, she never took the highway. So twice she had ran off the road while trying to fend him off. One was running up against an embankment, and the other was into a drain.
I hope she didn't have ponies in the car.
I don't know. She might have. I'm not sure who all she had
it's
in the car.
It's fucking weird. It's kind of fun crazy, though.
It is kind of fun crazy. Like, it's just a lot happening. So Helen allegedly said to a neighbor, "One of these days, that little bastard is going to kill me." Like, in regards to, like, his driving and taking the steering wheel.
You mean his
lack of driving. In regards to him wanting to learn how to drive while she's driving.
But just kidding.
Yeah, but psych. So on October 20th, 1992, Martin and Helen had three of their dogs in their Mazda 121, and they went to go shopping like they usually did. But of course, you know, they had to leave to go shopping. But this time they decided to go to a different town that required them to drive on the highway.
Uh-oh.
So after about 5 p.m., but still in the daylight, they're headed back to Taurusville. I just love that name. I won't stop calling the farm Taurusville.
Me too. I like it.
And they were less than a mile down the road from the town that they lived in when they got into a car accident. Martin told police that Helen had been distracted by the dogs fighting in the back seat, and his last recollection was turning to look back at the dogs and Helen veering across the double white lines straight into the path of an oncoming Ford sedan.
Oh, fuck.
When police arrived, they found Helen, who was 59 years old at the time, in the driver's seat, or she made it to be 59 years old, in the driver's seat. Her neck had been, like, clean snapped.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, she dead.
Yeah. Did he do that to her while they were driving?
One of the dogs had passed away.
Aww.
And the other did eventually succumb to its injuries and also pass away.
Aww.
But the third dog was okay and was able to return to Taurusville.
Okay.
And Martin had some serious neck injuries, which they showed through x-rays later down the line. Mm-hmm. And he spent 7 months in the hospital. Because he had two fractured vertebrae.
Fuck. Well, who's taking care of all the animals at Taurusville?
Probably his dad.
Okay.
The local newspaper wrote of Helen's death, from quiet homes and first beginning out to undiscovered ends, there's nothing worth the wear of winning but laughter and love of friends. It's kind of sweet.
That's very nice.
So obviously those who knew about Martin's impulses believe that he could have grabbed the steering wheel from her, but we just don't know.
Yeah, or just maybe instead of the steering wheel, just grabbed her head and snapped her neck.
I don't think.
Okay.
I think he probably just grabbed the steering wheel.
And they were going too fast.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah.
God, that's horrible.
Yeah. He's crazy.
Yeah, that's like, I don't understand. I do understand to some degree some impulse control issues. But nodding. But if you're on the highway to grab the steering wheel, especially when you know that when you're going even slow on a dirt road, you can wind up in a ditch.
Ugh. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I mean,
I feel stressed out
for this case,
for that particular incident.
Yeah. Being in the car with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Helen's death obviously had a profound impact on Martin.
I bet it did.
He lost his best friend and his maternal figure. And then he moved back to his family home for his father to look after him.
Aww.
But he like really regressed in this time and was starting to befriend really young children, like as young as 9. And he's 25 at this point.
That seems like not cool.
Yeah, not cool at all. A neighbor said the kids were weary of him. They understood instinctively that was someone to stay away from. He was just a little scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's all happening.
Yeah.
Scad. Sad and scary and not good.
No.
So Martin. All right. Well, Martin, he was named the sole beneficiary of Helen Harvey's will,
mm-hmm.
and he came into possession of her assets, which were totaling more than $550,000 Australian dollars, not including her payouts, though, that she was getting from the Tattersalls.
Right. From the gambling.
Yeah. From the gambling empire.
Mm-hmm.
So as Martin only had like the vaguest of ideas regarding like financial situations, his mom applied for and was granted a guardianship placement like over his assets under the management of the public trustees, which the order was based on evidence of his diminished intellectual capability, which we already knew about. Like, the, you know, the government's already knowing about this. They've already intervened and not intervened, but played a role in managing,
yes,
if you will. So he's back home now and Maurice is like overwhelmed and is constantly feeling anxious and depressed. So he went to go see their family doctor, Dr. Bernard Mather. Mind you, this was like the second time in 6 months that Maureen had gone to ask for help.
Maurice.
When I say Maureen. So mind you, this was the second time in 6 months that Maurice went to go ask for help. And he normally like never asked for help. This was very out of character for him.
So like, he's like,
he's always breaking down. Yeah.
Yeah, he's stressed.
So the doctor put him on prothiazide, which is a tricyclic antidepressant, which I don't really know what that means.
Nope, but it sounds like three times something.
It's an antidepressant.
And it's three.
So Maurice knew that Martin couldn't handle his own inheritance from Helen by himself. So he was afraid that, you know, he would blow all of like the millions that he was going to gather and acquire if no one helped him.
Mm-hmm.
So Maurice decided that a court order under the Mental Health Act was the only way to take control of Martin's financial affairs and have them manage independently. So this way his son would still be given, you know, a stipend every month or as he wished. He could also be given a stipend, but the money would be doled out in a controlled way. Mm-hmm. So it would last for the entirety of his life. Maurice had also put his and his wife's joint bank accounts under Carlene's name, just her name alone, and he signed every single bill over to her.
Okay.
So a few days after sorting out like all the financial affairs, on Friday, August 13th, 1993, Maurice drove...
What? I just feel like that was a warning sign.
Maurice drove to Copping, however you say the name of this town, for the weekend. Remember, that's where Taurusville is.
Mm-hmm.
So Carlene didn't question at the time that her husband wanted to spend alone time, but became anxious when he still hadn't called her at about 7:30 that evening. He sounded like he was really quiet and withdrawn, like once they finally did get on the phone. And Carlene said, over all the years, when any of us would travel to Port Arthur, we would always telephone the other when we had arrived safely. On Friday morning, Maurice telephoned and said very little other than, I love you. At the time, I was surprised as he had not said that before when calling. And so I assumed he'd had a few drinks. So Maurice made another call that night to their daughter, Lindy, and he said that he loved her. He did not call Martin. And then the next morning, someone came to the house to like for an advertisement that was posted somewhere about buying a horse float. And no one answered, but there was a note pinned to the door that was in Maurice's handwriting that said, called the police. So by mid-morning, police had scrambled to the property. There were 20 policemen there and also the local rural fire service volunteers all to come help, you know, search about the 72 acres almost that they had. And there were also four dams on the property. And so divers were finally called in on the search on the second day. And on August 16th, his body was found in the dam closest to the farmhouse. He had a diving weight belt around his neck. And he was submerged under like 3 meters of water. And police described his death as unnatural, but they ruled it a suicide.
Yeah.
Because in his pocket, there was an anti-anxiety drug called Serapax. And 18 of the 30 milligram tablets were missing from it.
Aww.
Yeah. So they ruled it a suicide.
Plus, he put everything in her name. He was like...
He preemptively.
Yeah, that's why I said I was like, oh, I don't like that.
Yeah, it's a warning sign.
Yeah.
So now Martin has inherited his father's superannuation fund, which was valued at $250,000 Australian dollars.
But I thought it went to the wife first. No, the annuity was set up for Martin.
Yeah. Yep. So when he was at the farm, remember how he was like dressing the part of playing farmer?
Mm-hmm.
Well, all of a sudden, like, he switched it up, and he would often appear at this suburban cafe for afternoon tea in a gray linen suit, lizard skin shoes, and a Panama hat.
Okay.
And he would often tell the ladies behind the counter that he was carrying a briefcase because he had a job that earned him $400 a week.
Yeah.
Just odd.
Yeah.
It was also said that there was this restaurant in North Hobart where he was a regular and he wore this electric blue suit with flared trousers and a ruffled shirt.
That's a choice again.
And this is what the owner, Chris Jackman, had to say about him.
And what year was that? Because that's like the 90s by now, right?
Yeah, we're in the 90s.
Yeah, so he shouldn't be dressing like the Partridge Family.
Yeah, he should not be.
Okay.
We're in 93, I think. We're still in 93.
Gotcha.
Yeah, we're in 93. So this is what the owner, Chris Jackman, had to say about it. He said, it was horrible. Everyone was laughing at him, even the customers. I felt suddenly quite sorry for him. I realized this guy didn't have any friends. He was like a child trying to impress everyone. He struck me as a very eager sort of young guy, like a Labrador puppy, always having something to say, always trying to impress.
Aw, that's kind of sad.
It is kind of sad. So Martin was super lonely because, like, his only two people that he really had passed away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, like, he still has his mom, but, you know.
They have a different relationship.
From what I gather, their relationship is not the same as, you know, as it might be with the sister. But anyway, so Martin was super lonely. And at this point, like, his money is really burning a hole in his pocket, as you could probably imagine.
Right.
So in December of 1993, he decided to venture outside of Hobart. And he got his first regular stipend from the Tattersalls. And he bought himself a ticket to Melbourne and then on to Singapore. And he managed to stay away for just 3 days before returning home.
All the way to Singapore for 3 days?
Yeah, but he's in Australia.
I know, but it's still
closer.
It's way closer, but it's still far.
Yeah, it is. But then when he returned, he sold Taurusville for $143,000.
Is that good or bad?
He just sold it. I don't know.
Well, no, not that he sold it, but like, was that the fair market price?
Or did he don't know if it's a fair market price. I don't know how much they bought it for, but he kept the house, the Newtown mansion that was Helen's like home that, you know, they met at.
Yeah, the original.
Yeah.
That had to be cleaned
one on
for
Claire Street.
Three fucking months.
What, with Bruna or something like that was its name? I don't know. I could go back and look, but I already stumbled over it the first time, so... So in April of 1994, not long after selling the farm, he went back to Melbourne and then he bought a flight to Bangkok and then he traveled to London and then to Sweden and then to Los Angeles and then back to Melbourne all before May 7th.
Fuck.
From April. So he went like around the world.
Yeah, and,
like,
he jet-setted very quickly.
Yeah. And in the 2 years... to the end of 1995, he visited Europe 6 times, the U.S. and Southeast Asia 3 times, as well as New Zealand and Japan. The summary of his domestic travel over the same period was a 3-page-long list.
Fuck.
Yeah. So he traveled to Queensland and to South Australia, but most often to Melbourne because he loved the zoo. So he would, again... This is that psychiatrist who we're going to meet later, Professor Mullen or Dr. Mullen.
Uh-huh.
So this is what he relayed to him. This is what he had to say about his traveling. Sorry. Mr. Bryant stated the best part of his international trips was the long plane journey. It transpired to the attraction of the plane, of the long airplane journey, that he could speak to the people next to him, who presumably, being strapped to their seats, had no choice but to at least appear friendly. Mr. Bryant became quite animated in describing some of what he regarded as the more successful interactions with fellow travelers. This account was confirmed by statements obtained by the police from passengers who found themselves seated next to Mr. Bryant.
That's really sad that, like, the best part of the trip is just being, like, with people that are forced to talk to him.
Yeah.
That's really sad.
It is really sad. Well, that's what I'm saying. I feel like he obviously has issues, but, like, could have probably been handled better by the people in his life.
Yeah.
Help take care of him.
Because he should have, could have had friends.
Yeah. I mean, well, he did have a friend, but then he got violent. So it's a violent tendency thing too.
Yeah.
So Martin ultimately became suicidal after deciding that he had had enough at this point in his life. So he stated, I just felt more people were against me. When I tried to be friendly toward them, they just walked away. So he had been a little bit more than a social drinker in the past. His alcohol consumption increased.
Oh, that's probably not good.
His average daily consumption was estimated at a half a bottle of Sambuca, a bottle of Bailey's, supplemented with port wine and other sweet drinks.
Ugh.
And according to Martin, he thought of the plan for Port Arthur maybe like 4 to 12 weeks before it happened, which is part two.
Fuck.
That's where I'm going to leave you.
Gosh, okay.
It's crazy, yo.
I don't know. I feel like it's going to be bad.
Yeah. Feel correctly.
But I feel sad for him right now.
I do, too. I feel sad that he's broken.
Yeah. I feel sad that he's broken and didn't get redirected in a positive way and wasn't able to maintain relationships, you know.
Yeah.
To have friends.
I feel like he just I'm trying to think of the words. I mean, it was clear from a young age, obviously, even though his mom, she was said to be like stoic and didn't want to believe it, that there was something wrong. And it's like, instead of like leaning into that something was wrong and trying to figure it out when he was young, it was like the backwards, though, than the Sid and Nancy stuff. Than Sid, or the, sorry, not Sid, than Nancy. Because like her mom was like, yeah, there's something definitely wrong with her. Can we treat her? Can we fix her? And his parents are like, oh, there's something definitely wrong with him. Maybe we just need to like tighten up our parenting more.
Yeah, that's, it's all sad. It's very sad. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Appreciate it. That's all I got. You can follow us on the Instagram page that we have that we use from time to time again. That we'll need to start picking back up our usage on, right, Mom?
Yes.
At That's Disturbing Podcast. And you can send us a DM there on what you want to hear from us. Or you can send it on our Gmail, thatsdisturbingpodcast@gmail.com. Alrighty, that's all I got. You got anything else? Housekeeping?
No, I got nada.
Okay. Bye-bye.